Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Affordability has become a buzzword in the world of politics over serious concern about just how unaffordable everyday life has become for so many Americans. The Census Bureau reports that in North Carolina, a family of five with a total income of less than $40,000 is living in poverty. That means 12%. Of our state's population finds itself in that category. Worse, a new report from the United Way finds a much larger group is struggling to make ends meet. As many as 28% of the state's households are earning above that poverty threshold, but still cannot afford basic expenses. Meanwhile, those expenses continue to rise with unabating inflation. Prices of everyday items have soared 25% in just 6 years. That new report from the United Way is a new kind of report about households that they define as ALICE, asset limited, income restrained, but employed. These are families earning above the federal poverty level, but not enough to afford the basic expenses of the county in which they live. The national average is 41%. The number in Mecklenburg County is 37%. It's 45% in Gaston County. 39% in Catawba, 36% in Cabarrus, and 34% in Iredell and Union counties, just some of the counties surrounding us. And here to help us explore what this means to these people, to society, and to our economy at large is Stephanie Hoops. She's an economist and national director of United for ALICE, which is a national organization based out of the United Way of Northern New Jersey. She's with us along with Jameez Ivey, senior vice president and chief impact officer for United Way of Greater Charlotte. And Matthew Metzger is back. He's our returning champion. He's a clinical professor of economics at UNC Charlotte. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Stephanie, let me begin with you because this is your report. I said that the ALICE report is a new kind of report that was developed by the United Way of Northern New Jersey, first as a pilot program, if I understand this correctly, for Morris County, New Jersey, which is in obviously Northern New Jersey. And then under your supervision, it expanded to all 3,000 counties in the United States. Okay, so in what way, though, is it different?
Well, it actually tells us what's happening on the ground in every county. So what makes our measure different than the federal poverty level, which is the same number, as you mentioned, across the country, we measure the actual cost of just the bare bones, basic household, we call the household survival budget for every county in the country. So just the basics of rental housing, family child care, food at home, not eating out, the running cost of your car, basic health care, a very small technology line, and then ALICE pays taxes. So we add that up and then compare it to household income. So we have budgets for all different household combinations, and that's how we can compare county versus county. So, you know, you were sharing the important differences across the region. Those costs are comparable. And so when we're talking about the percent of ALICE in one county to the other, we are actually measuring the same thing rather than an arbitrary number that the federal poverty level has unfortunately become.
We're going to be hearing a lot about this very unattractive individual ALICE as we go through it. So let me once again, it's an acronym. Let me give you the actual words that ALICE is comprised of. Asset limited, income restrained, but employed.
Sometimes. So one slight, it's income constrained.
Oh, okay. And sometimes
we have to get the C in there for ALICE.
I guess that's true. Sometimes these people are not just employed. They're employed at several jobs, two or three jobs at a time. So who are these people, Stephanie?
Well, so we have the numbers, but I really appreciate you bringing up, let's think about the people. And we all know, with 41% of households, we know ALICE. So think about the workers as your Going about your day, you're getting a package dropped off. That delivery driver might be Alice. You're on your way to work, you're dropping your child off at childcare, you're going to the bank, you're getting your coffee. The barista could be Alice. So, folks that we interact with actually make our lives run smoothly, and yet they're struggling to support their own families.
So
And
these
then
are our
Alice
friends,
might be
our.
a little
Go
closer
ahead.
to us, our friends, our family. For me, I've got two young adults starting off in the work world and having a terrible time finding an apartment they can afford near their job. So
So to be
it's a
clear,
challenge that we're all seeing.
these are not deadbeats. These are people who are working or trying to find a job and cannot. These are people who serve us every day in restaurants and coffee shops, in banks as tellers. Teachers, I think, fall into this category in many cases. And could it be any of us, if we lose a job or face an incredibly expensive medical emergency, for instance, could any of us become Alice?
Absolutely. And we do see that those pivotal moments can be a health emergency, a natural disaster, can be a tipping point for a household. So, with such thin margins, even if you're just above that threshold, you can still be vulnerable. But if you're already below that threshold, we see that most Alice households don't have emergency savings to weather even a small, flat tire, all those things that happen to us on a regular basis, and they're inconvenient. Unless you don't have the money to fix your flat tire, then you might not be able to get to work. You don't get paid for a couple days. You can see how something small can spiral into a much more vulnerable situation.
Jamie Zivy is with us. She's with the United Way of Greater Charlotte. These are people who are living, obviously, paycheck to paycheck, Jamie, and who are often one unexpected expense away from disaster, who have to make critical choices about whether to pay the rent or buy food for the kids or pay the bills or buy gas to get to work. If they can't get to work, they can't pay the bills, etc. It's a tough thing. Are these also the people that we sometimes refer to as suffering from housing instability?
Yes. And again, as Stephanie mentioned, in the Alice framework and the survival budget, it really talks about housing cost, which the federal poverty level line has not in history. So, looking at housing costs, especially in Charlotte, as we know that housing is unattainable, unaffordable for many of the folks, that this group of folks who we are considering Alice are having constraints in finding housing. And being able to keep housing because of the things that you guys just mentioned, a flat tire, not being able to get to work, not being able to have childcare, which then they can't get to work. So we have to think about a person as a whole person, all the things that they need to really survive, and hopefully move to thriving. But we just have to think about the things that you really need on a basic level, and housing is one of those. And again, yes, in Charlotte, it's unattainable for many.
Matthew Metzger is also with us. He, like Stephanie, is an economist. He's a clinical professor of economics at UNC Charlotte. The Alice Report says, Matthew, that the federal poverty level figure that's given out all the time is an obsolete tool. It says that that number doesn't take into account some of the things that we've been talking about, and particularly the wide variation in the cost of living from one area to another, nor has its methodology been updated since the 1960s when it was instituted. If you agree with that, if so, why are we using an obsolete yardstick to measure economic prosperity or the lack of it?
It definitely is outdated. When it was first put in, it's really meant to signify, I would call maybe just extreme poverty at the time, like meaning someone just doesn't even have enough money to buy something to eat. Beyond that, as they've talked about, there's just wide differences in the cost of living. If you're living in New York City or Birmingham, Alabama, the cost can be much, much different. And so, as a federal tool, it was never meant to go beyond that. When you can look at like the Alice report, now you can look at county by county and see those differences. The federal tool is just more of just like, here's just a minimum level you would need to almost just survive. And then beyond that, It's more handed off to the states, what they want to do, to make adjustments to their aid or whatever packages they have. So it's more of just like a floor, I guess. And so it hasn't been updated, and it's not really the full picture of what a family in poverty, or even again above poverty, goes through
So,
today.
assuming that you've had a chance to look through some of the numbers in this Alice report, is it a better yardstick? Is it something we should adopt?
Well, I'm not sure when you say adopt, I mean, it definitely gives a more realistic picture of all the other expenses. The other thing that you come in is from the 1960s to today, there's a lot more different expenses, and there's not more like, two parent working households. So now you have a greater demand for childcare than maybe you did back in the 60s. So it's just more of an update. It's a more realistic picture. It's a fuller picture of what an average two-income family mentioned in the report, what their costs are.
Stephanie, we have teams of people allegedly at the federal government putting out these numbers, although some of them have been cut because of DOGE, and there are some questions about whether we can rely on numbers now from the federal government in many different categories. But this is a project of the United Way. Is this something that you will update on a periodic basis? Is this a one-shot deal? Once and done? How will we? How do you keep pace with the changing economics of reality?
So we have been tracking this data. We go back to 2010, and so you can see the trend line across North Carolina. And so we do plan to keep updating it annually because people have started to rely on it. It has become a much, more accurate picture, measure of what's happening on the ground. I think there are some headwinds to actually replacing the federal poverty level, but we see a lot of people using it as a companion. And, we think that that's a really important next step.
We're talking about the United Way's new Alice report, and we'll get into some of the numbers as we go through this hour here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. United for Alice, which is the organization that I guess is the umbrella organization of all this, Stephanie, would like to see the use of the term working poor replaced by the term Alice. Working poor, and we've talked about this on this program a thousand times, working poor was adopted to remind people that a lot of the people who are in grave need of resources and help are not deadbeats. They are working as hard as they possibly can and still can't make it. So why is Alice something a better way to understand for the average person to understand what's going on here?
Right. We're trying to change the way people are understanding what that hardship looks like and who is facing it. And unfortunately, a lot of people have some stereotypes around poverty. And there are maybe some moral connotations or assumptions that people are lazy or not trying hard. So we want to remove those stereotypes from the conversation and bring in. We all know Alice. Alice is part of our regular life. And by reframing what we're talking about and reminding folks that Alice is all ages, all race ethnicities, rural and urban, all household combinations, people that you're, volunteering with at your church social, people that you're cheering with on the sideline of the soccer field, to really appreciate Alice can be a vital contributor to your community and yet still struggling.
Stephanie Hoops is an economist and the national director of United for Alice, which is a project of the United Way of Northern New Jersey. It's a national report now. She's here with Jamiz Ivey from the United Way of Greater Charlotte and Matthew Metzger at UNC Charlotte, where he is an economist. We'll take a break, come back with more in just a moment, and dig into some of these numbers, particularly when we localize it to Mecklenburg County and the surrounding area. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the new Alice report, Asset-Limited, Income-Constrained, Employed. That's the acronym from the United Way and United for Alice. Stephanie Hoops is the executive director of that organization. Jamiz Ivey's with us. She's the senior vice president and chief impact officer of United Way of Greater Charlotte. And Matthew Metzger is an economist with UNC Charlotte. So you say, Stephanie, that 41% of households in North Carolina fall under the ALICE definition. And those people are forced to make, these are your words, impossible choices, like deciding whether to pay for utilities or a tank of gas. And since this is a new report, you may not know the answer to this, but how much worse are things? Because these are, I think these are 2024, 2025 numbers. How much worse are things than they might have been 5, 10 years ago?
So we've seen a steady increase in the number of ALICE households, those in poverty. So currently in across the state, 13% of households are below the federal poverty level. Another 28% are ALICE. So that's what's being missed by our standard measure. And we've seen the number of those ALICE households tick up steadily since 2010. The trend line is showing that continuing. We've seen some bumps along the way, and you know, we're hopeful that things are maybe ticking down a little bit, but with, as you already pointed out, increase in the price of gas, utilities, that there's some real headwinds. And one of
Yeah, because the inflation rate went up to 4.2%. It was announced yesterday. And salaries have gone up, I think, 3.4%. So we're not keeping pace. Things have to be getting worse because it's not keeping pace.
And in fact, it's even worse for ALICE. We track the change in the cost of ALICE's basic household items with our ALICE Essentials Index. And those are increasing faster than that overall CPI. That's, you know, the goods and services that people of all incomes in urban areas are purchasing. So the cost of basics are increasing even more. And so even though ALICE might be getting a wage increase, it's not enough to afford even the same basket of groceries they were buying last year.
Jameez, you're on the front lines of this here in Charlotte, through the United Way of Greater Charlotte. Did the findings in this report surprise you or merely confirm what you already know?
So I'll say that I feel like it did both. So our United Way, we take a neighborhood approach. So we are working in our most disinvested neighborhoods across Mecklenburg County. And for years, what we are wanting to do is lift children and families out of poverty. So that federal poverty level line is something that we have leaned on, of looking at who we need to go and serve, what communities we need to serve. When the ALICE data came out, we actually took a look to see who was in poverty versus who was considered ALICE in those areas that we serve. And in each of the areas that we are in, there are more ALICE families in all of them. They more than double people in poverty. So it was just shocking for us to see that there is a whole other group of people who need support and who do not have the safety net. So as we said earlier, ALICE families, they do not, they're above the federal poverty line, so they don't get those safety nets like a childcare resource voucher or SNAP benefits, which we call, you know, what other known as food stamps. So it really looked, we had to look at ourselves and say, there are more people who we need to serve maybe in a different way than what we've previously been doing. So yes, it was shocking in that way, but we also, this group of folks have always been around. And so what we're just excited about is that ALICE gives us the data and helps us tell the stories and actually see this group of folks who we call ALICE, and hope that we all can support them and hopefully see them thrive as we have done for the past 95 years here at United
Matthews,
Way.
Jameez brings up something that I was going to ask you about, because we have known about these folks forever. We've talked about them on this program forever and other programs as well. And this is a new way of looking at it through ALICE, but the problem remains. And it's almost as though no one is listening, because inflation continues unabated, wages are not rising, the minimum wage has not risen in a very, very, very long time. From an economist's point of view, what does this do to the overall economy, and is this sustainable?
Well, it has been a problem. I guess that's, you know, existed for a long time. You know, whether it's sustainable or not, I mean, you know, things kind of can continue on for families and individuals that are not great for them, but unless some force changes, they're going to stay on that path. I mean, the thing, you know, when I read the report, you know, when you look at, okay, it says a family needs, you know, 80,000 and they're bringing in 70, there's no real reason to think any of these expenses are going to drop. If anything, they're going to keep increasing. And so, if the status quo continues, it's certainly not going to decrease in any, radical way. So you have to think about what sort of policies or what sort of changes you can come in to help, move this problem in a different direction. Because, like you said, it's been there a long time. Without any, major shift, it'll continue. And a lot of these families are, as we said, living on the edge, one paycheck away, one, medical expense, car repair, from really getting into a tough situation. So, I look more at what's the long-term solution. How do you move these families, like Jamie said, to get them thriving?
And I want to get into that in a second or two here. Your report, Stephanie, says that North Carolina ranks 32nd in the nation among all states, including the District of Columbia. So 32nd after out of 51. Number one is the state with the lowest rate of hardship. 50 is the worst. So we're 13th from the bottom, essentially. How do other nearby states, Virginia, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, compare to North Carolina?
So yeah, the average for the US is 41% below the Alice threshold. So North Carolina is really right on par. You do have some neighboring states with even higher rates. Some of your southern neighbors are higher 40s, and so that's also concerning. But I want to go back to what Matthew was saying about this number increasing, and we're seeing it in some of your neighboring states that. To have this many households just affording the basics is a drag on the economy. They're not great consumers. They're not buying other products. They're not helping the economy grow. And so we all do better if Alice does better. Where the tipping point is, where it's too much of a drag, we don't know. But we, to see it keep increasing is obviously a big concern
I'm just curious.
and something that.
I don't want to spend a lot of time with it. I'm just curious, who is first? Who's doing best? What state is doing best? What state's at the bottom of the heap?
So I think Louisiana has the highest this year, and the lowest is one of the Dakotas. So
And
very.
highest means that Louisiana is doing better than every other state in the
No.
country?
So the
The other way
highest
around.
percent below the Alice threshold.
Okay.
So the lowest rank.
And of course, North Dakota is doing well because nobody lives there. It is becoming
Housing's cheap.
increasingly apparent that the middle class, Matthew, is disappearing, and that a growing number of people are struggling. Talk about the causes of this. Obviously, inflation is a cause, and obviously, a lack of increase in compensation, worker compensation, is a cause. And is it? Are those causes and any other causes that you come up with within the control of business or the government or government policy?
Great question. Yeah, I mean, a lot of that middle has been carved out where jobs have been replaced by could be, overseas, could be automation, recently more with AI. And so some of those people that maybe were earning a middle class wage maybe now are dropping to lower skilled occupations and lower income, whereas some of the higher income, families continue. So, if you look at trying to solve that puzzle and get more people earning a living wage for their family, you have to talk about getting their skills up and making sure those skills fit the modern economy. And so, you have to look at trajectories of jobs over the next, 5, 10 years and things like that. Where's the job growth? Get people, get those skills, get them into training programs. Even something like electricians, when I was getting ready for this show, the demand for electricians is really, going to expand, faster than other jobs over the next 5 to 10 years. And if you drive around Charlotte, you see all this construction. They all need electricians to wire in these new homes. Those are, good paying jobs. And so if you can get someone to get trained and transition into that, they're going to be stable. They're in a job that's not going to get taken away by these forces, and it can help them get more stability in their family.
Is this, in your mind, like a second industrial revolution?
AI, possibly, it's so early to tell how many jobs it's going to automate, but over the next few years, I think we'll really be able to see. Certainly, you look at even, fast food restaurants, a lot of them are replacing the person at the window with AI, where you just go in and speak to a computer And so if things like that end up working and are efficient, they'll just spread like wildfire through the economy.
With the ALICE report, Stephanie, you have created something called the ALICE Household Survival Budget. This includes all the necessities that, and you've kind of alluded to this, but all those necessities that people need to cover with their incomes. And it defines those people who fall into the 41% of individuals in our state who must make these impossible choices because they can't do everything that they need to do. What's in, go through the list of things again that are included in that budget.
Right, and this is something we review every year with our research advisory committee members, which we have in each state, kind of external experts, subject experts, data experts. And so the definition that we use, and there are other measures out there that have slightly different purposes, but we're just looking for that bare minimum that you need to live and work in the current economy. Just to get by. This isn't a budget to get ahead. This isn't a stable budget. This is just that bare minimum. So it includes, rental housing, family childcare, not licensed accredited centers that are much more expensive. It's food at home. It's that thrifty food plan. It's, really hard to shop for and cook for because it's such a low number. It's, basic healthcare, the out-of-pocket expenses. It's assuming that you have employer-sponsored healthcare, so just that employee portion. We know a lot of families
Is that
don't
an
have
accurate
that.
assumption to make? Can you make that assumption?
Well, it's still employer-sponsored healthcare is still the number one source of insurance today, but in some places it's getting very close to being other sources. So
Do
we're keeping our eye on that.
fast food workers, do waiters and waitresses and bartenders have that benefit?
Right. So a lot of them don't, and that's our point is,
Yeah.
here's what is still the most common, but so many people don't have that, and then therefore their costs are going to be more. We have basic running cost of a car. If there's public transportation available, that's often cheaper, and we use that number, but it's not it's only reliable in about 30 counties in the country. And then we have a small technology line, which we didn't used to have in the early days, but now that it's become ubiquitous and you need a cell phone to get your schedule for the day or report notes in on your patient. So just those bare minimum things. And then ALICE pays taxes. ALICE is a contributor in that way. And so we add those up, and that's the survival budget.
And in Mecklenburg County, taxes are about half of what it costs to rent an apartment or have a mortgage. So it's a considerable figure. Matthew, this report it has interactive charts that you can type in a county, wherever you are in the country, and come up with what an individual and various family groupings would need in order to survive. I did this yesterday. In Mecklenburg County, it says a single individual must make $21.85 an hour to meet expenses. One adult with a child, $29.37 an hour. One adult with a child in childcare, $34.17 an hour. And all of those numbers are well above the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. What kinds of jobs, Matthew, pay those wages that are sufficient to survive?
Yeah, like I was saying, you really need a skill in the modern economy, and it's got to be something that's in demand, out there. And so, if you look at, traditional male, occupations, again, I mentioned you have, electricians, plumbers, things like that. On the female side, you have, licensed practical nurse, you have medical assistant. Basically, something that, another notch of education is often needed, an associate's degree maybe of some sort to get into those type of positions. But if you have a high school diploma, you're basically into what some would call like an unskilled labor, and you're maybe in that $15 to $20 range in Charlotte for those type of jobs. And as you just saw, if you have, a child or two children, that's not enough. And so you've got to get into other types of positions. And the first step is, an associate's degree or some sort of training is similar to that. that you can get into that $25, $30 an hour job, and
If
then
I
you know
did the math
scale
correctly, very quickly on my handy dandy calculator here, if you make $34.17 an hour, work 40 hours a week for 52 weeks, you make $71,000 a year. And that's the minimum that you need to survive if you are an adult with a child in child care. These are all figures from the United Way's ALICE report that we're talking about this morning on WFAE Charlotte Talks. Jermaine, when it comes to housing, the ALICE Survival Budget Calculator says that in Mecklenburg County, you need a minimum of $1,628 for housing, $534 for food. It's slightly less in the surrounding counties, but only slightly. And in Mecklenburg, to meet those and the other expenses, you need to make $29.16 an hour. If you just meet those expenses, Jermaine, what kind of life are you living?
That life, you're still making hard choices. You're still having to figure out what you're going to pay for if you have children, if you can send your child to a birthday party and give them a birthday gift to take. It's still not, like I said earlier, a thriving life. It's still making hard decisions, not having a savings account. So if some kind of expense come up, a flat tire, a medical expense, you wouldn't be able to pay that, and you would have to be figuring out where in your budget you're going to cut that from. So it's still not a thriving life.
And do you find the people that you work with at United Way, the people that you reach out to and help, or that reach out to you for help, are they wisely budgeting the few dollars they have, or are they spending them on things that they really shouldn't because you don't have that kind of money?
And so I think that's something that people make an assumption about folks who are living paycheck to paycheck. But I like to say that people are the experts of their own lives, and they know what they need, and they are very strategic in how they use their funding and how they use their dollars, their income. So for the most part, across the board, where I see where we're working, I do not run into that. I run into people who I'm doing what I need to do for my family, with what I have, the best way that I know how to do it.
Jermaine Ives with the United Way of Greater Charlotte, Stephanie Hoops with the United Way of New Jersey, Northern New Jersey, and ALICE, the United for ALICE, and Matthew Metzger is an economist at UNC Charlotte. We will continue in just a moment at Charlotte Talks. At Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org, I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about a new kind of report, a new report from the United Way of Northern New Jersey, and actually from United for ALICE, which is a division of that organization. It's called the ALICE Report because it's about asset-limited, income-constrained, employed individuals. Stephanie Hoops is here from that organization. Jameez Ivey is with us from the United Way of Greater Charlotte, and Matthew Metzger is an economist at UNC Charlotte. The ALICE report, Stephanie, also breaks down the numbers demographically. And in our state in 2024, it finds that groups with the highest percentage of households below the threshold include Black households. 55% of Black households are below the threshold. 54% of Indigenous households are in that category, along with 69% of households headed by those under the age of 25, and 50% of those over the age of 65. Those are alarming figures, at least to me. Are they alarming? And how does that compare to what's happening nationally?
So we're seeing similar trends across the country, and I think that it's in a great way to understand that there are so many different ALICE stories, that there isn't just one reason folks are ALICE, there isn't one path to being ALICE. And so we have ALICE of all ages, race, ethnicities, household types, and living in urban and rural areas. So you do call out some of the groups that we are concerned about. Certainly those young households headed by someone under the age of 25. It's actually a small group. It's hard to, as I know from firsthand experience, to be starting your first job and setting up your own household. Many of those young folks are back home living with their parents or living with roommates, trying to get that together. But the over 65 group is the largest age group, and it's the fastest growing with those aging baby boomers. And Social Security, here's a great example of how public policy tied to the federal poverty level is causing huge challenges. So Social Security gets most seniors above the federal poverty level, but not to the household survival budget. And hence so many seniors are continuing to work, continuing to struggle to afford just those basics. So I think a really big challenge coming to the state of North Carolina.
Jamise, the Charlotte Observer published an article yesterday about this Alice report. I think they were the first to publish information about this because it was embargoed until yesterday. But Stephanie is quoted in that article, Jamise, as saying that traditional measures of financial hardship don't tell the full story. If you think, she says, that only 13% of households are struggling, hey, maybe things aren't that bad. But this shows that things are that bad. You see it every day at the United Way of Greater Charlotte. How do you think that the average citizen understands this? Do our policymakers at the local, state, national level understand this?
I do not think that they understand it. And again, that federal poverty level number has tied to all of the public benefits that you can get. It also tells us who is and who we feel is in need. And so when they think about someone, one of the articles published, like a family of four need to make $105,000 a year. And so when we think about someone with income of that magnitude or that number, it shocks us and think, oh, they have no need. But when you actually look at what Stephanie's talking about, where they are, so if they're in Charlotte or if they're in New York, the amount of people that are in their households that they're taking care of, that number really doesn't matter when you look at the whole scope of things. So one thing that I've been sharing with the folks that we've been talking to is we're going to have a mindset shift about who really needs support and who really needs help, and not thinking about, well, if they make $100,000, that means they don't need support. And that's not true. And Alice really helps us see that.
Matthew, the biggest expense that most people have in their daily lives every month is the cost of housing, whether they rent or have a mortgage to pay. And in 2025, the State of Housing Instability and Homelessness report that is produced by Mecklenburg County reveals that half of renters here are considered cost burdened, meaning that they spend more than 30% of their income on housing. Those numbers are likely to continue rising, given the situation here in Charlotte. What are the implications of that?
Well, it continues to just put a strain on those renters. I mean, again, I would say, hate to be the bad news scenario, but again, I don't see that number improving. You know, when you see all these new apartment complexes being built around Charlotte, you know, all that costs money. They have to buy the land, they have to put up the buildings, they have the workers. It's a tremendous expense. And so that equates then to a certain rent level. So it's not like they're setting the rent to purposely put a strain on workers. That's just the market wage they have to charge, you know, for those properties. And so it's going to eat up a lot of their budget, and it's going to continue to put pressure on those people trying to, you know, get by if they're in this Alice category.
Well, prices are continuing to rise, and that means that companies are paying more for the goods that they sell. And so some have to raise their prices. Others may be profiteering, looking at rising prices, and they don't really need to raise their prices, but heck, they're doing it across the street, so let me raise my prices and make more money. But wages have remained relatively stagnant over the last several years. Have we been through a period like this in the past, Matthew? And if so, how did we get out of it?
Definitely. You know, if you look back, it's cyclical, and it usually happens in similar patterns where prices go up maybe faster than wages. And then either what happens is wages start to catch up, or often you have a recession. And then that's going to bring those prices back down and get things more in line. You know, I remember I worked in banking in 2008, right before the housing crash. And I remember putting a chart up that said, you know, housing prices are going like this and wages are going like this. And I'm like, this is not sustainable. It can't continue. And so what we had was the big housing crash. But things do tend to adjust over time one way or another, that wages catch up or prices come back down.
And there doesn't seem to be much of a push at the federal level to raise the federal minimum wage. North Carolina's minimum wage is pegged to that figure at $7.25 an hour, which seems to be, I made more than that in 1973. So it just seems to me to be completely unreasonable. There was this bill introduced in the State House to increase that minimum wage in our state to $15 an hour, but it has been sitting in committee since April, which is where bills go to die in our legislature. But even that doesn't reach the figures needed to exceed the threshold set by the Alice report in most urban counties in our state, Matthew. How many companies are merely paying the minimum wage to workers? What kinds of jobs are these?
You know, if you look at ads for around Charlotte, I don't see hardly any at minimum wage. They're almost all above that. And, you know, I hate to, again, sound like this the bad news, but most economists are not in favor of raising the minimum wage. And on the surface, it sounds like, well, you're just cold-hearted that, you know, you're trying to deny that, you know, wage to people. It's not really the case. It's just if you try to artificially inflate wages, it leads to other secondary problems that are usually worse than the first one.
Well, if you raise wages, don't you as a business have to raise prices? So isn't it a vicious cycle? You're raising wages to compensate for the inflated prices, but that's going to cause more inflation.
Correct. And that's why I actually worked minimum wage in West Virginia long ago when they raised the minimum wage. And the day they raised it, the manager, one, raised prices on the menu and came by and told us, hey, I'm also going to cut your hours. And so I was a direct recipient of the benefit of a higher wage. I didn't get a benefit at all. My hours got cut.
Jamiz, in May, it was reported that a record number of people were living on the streets in Mecklenburg County. There was a 12% increase in homeless people as captured by the annual Point in Time survey, which was conducted in January. There are a number of reasons why people end up on the street. Money is not the only reason, but it's certainly one of them. Do we know how much of it is due simply to insufficient income? They cannot afford housing.
So I am not an economist and have those numbers in my back pocket. But what I can say and what I do feel is if we don't think about this ALICE population and they slip into actual poverty, that will continue to people slipping into homelessness. So for us, it's really trying to be more preventative than reactive of how can we support this group of folks so that they do not slip or have a chance to slip into homelessness, especially in Mecklenburg County with the cost of housing, as we've talked about before. So what we're looking at to do is, what can we do for you now? How can we help better serve this population so they don't have an emergency or a cost that puts them further behind? So we really try to go upstream in the work that we do to think about if a household knows that they have a something coming up, they lost their job or they had a flat tire, we're hoping to get to a place where they can come to us before they slip behind in like a rent payment or before a flat tire causes them not to go to work. I'm not an economist. I don't have those numbers, but I do see that if we do not support this group, we will see an increased number in people in homelessness.
Stephanie, let's talk for a second about another group that maybe has disappeared in this conversation, although it was alluded to, and that's seniors who are living on a fixed income. We're watching prices rise precipitously every single day of the week, it seems. We know that a 1 cent sales tax in Mecklenburg County to support transportation is about to kick in at the end of June. Raising prices at the cash register. We know that the city of Charlotte is planning a 7% property tax increase. The county is holding the line at the moment, but we know an increase at the county level is inevitable in the next year or two. With inflation of ordinary goods and services, the cost of housing also on the rise, all of that must be outpacing any Social Security cost of living increases. Are we seeing more older Americans who perhaps did not have the kinds of pensions that others have or did not start a 401k and who are relying on Social Security? Are we seeing more of them finding themselves in terrible situations?
Yes, I think that's starting to happen. And we're very concerned that group will get bigger. And so thank you for, putting a spotlight on it here on your show. I think all local and state government agencies should be thinking about this. And there are so many ways that seniors can be supported, their healthcare needs, their transportation needs. And we've been talking about housing in a few different ways, but think about the housing needs of seniors. They're smaller units, they're lower cost units, and are those the ones that we're building today? So I think considering this population is really important for the planning that's happening. So what are these tax increases going towards? Think about your population and their needs.
So Matthew, according to a report by Go Banking Rates, you were in banking, a personal finance website, Go Banking Rates, you need $69,237 a year to retire comfortably in the state of North Carolina. The Alice report indicates 50% of those people are below the threshold and in financial hardship. And we keep hearing that the average person has not put that much money away for retirement and will have to rely on Social Security. If that's what you're relying on, how much more financial strain are you facing? And is it realistic for those not yet in that retirement pipeline? Is that something they should change now while they can?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the prevention of those problems starts, as early as you can, obviously, due to compound interest. And so, if you start saving when you're 30 or 40 or whatever, then obviously that's more benefit. Now, of course, as Jamise was talking about, a lot of these families aren't going to have any money for savings if they're totally, strained on the normal household budget. So, it can really be a downward cycle where you see that, okay, if you're constrained over a lifetime income-wise, and now you're 65 and all you have is Social Security, and as Stephanie said, those costs are going up, well, what do? You're in a really tough situation. And so, you can talk about different policy options and everything like that, but trying to fix those problems earlier are going to be way cheaper than trying to fix them later.
Word to the wise. We're talking about the Alice Report, which is a new way of looking at the poverty line produced by the United Way and United for Alice on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. We're watching grocery prices go up, Stephanie. Gasoline prices are substantially higher than they were a year ago. Electricity bills are also rising, mainly because of data centers and the need to rebuild the grid. Car and homeowner insurance rates are on the rise. Healthcare costs are on the rise as the Trump administration has chipped away at the Affordable Care Act and other aspects of medical security. And sales taxes are set to rise here in Mecklenburg County. But it's not just happening here. It's happening around the country. So you've produced this report, and United Way has put out these numbers, and we've all been through them. Should government go through these numbers? Should private businesses be going through these numbers right now?
Absolutely. And I'd like to end on somewhat of a hopeful note, because it's really hard data that we're looking at, and it's very concerning. But there are folks who are starting to take these numbers and do something about them. And so exactly the groups that you're mentioning. So employers are recognizing Alice in their workforce, and recognizing that if they can do better in terms of wages and benefits, scheduling, career development, that they don't have the same turnover that they do if they have less sensitive policies. And so that actually saves them money. It can be a win-win for Alice to do well and your company to do well. And another area with, I think, government can step in. In Mecklenburg County, we see 30% of renters below the Alice threshold are paying more than the median owner costs. So these renters would be paying less if they were owners, but they can't get there. They may need help with that security deposit. They need help with that low fee mortgage. So there are some severe barriers, but if you can help families get over those barriers into homeownership, not only are they paying less a month, but then they're starting to build their own asset. And so I think that there's some barriers that the government can help remove and help Alice families, but also help the whole economy.
And one area in Charlotte, one problem in Charlotte is that a lot of corporations are coming in and buying these entry-level starter home houses for rental purposes, and that locks people who may be able to afford them out of that market. We have to stop there. The Alice Report, produced by Stephanie Hoops with the United Way of New Jersey and United for Alice, James Majuni's Ivy with Greater Charlotte's United Way, and Matthew Metzger from UNC Charlotte.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.